Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Local Shop Podcast. I'm Chris, and today we're talking about an issue that is never far away from the headlines, that is retail crime. Joining me on the podcast today are ACS Chief Executive James Lohman, ACS Government Relations Director Ed Woodall, Head of Retail at NYSA Taranjit Dillon, and award-winning independent retailer Ben Selvaratnam. Thank you, everyone, for being part of this discussion, which we're framing around the 2025 crime report being launched this week. And as with most years recently, and unfortunately some shocking but not necessarily surprising figures. So let's go through some of the main headlines. Big thing from this year's report, 6.2 million incidents of theft. That's up from last year, 5.6 million last year, over a million incidents of verbal abuse, and more than 59,000 incidents of violence recorded in the sector over the last 12 months. Some really eye-catching figures there. So Taranjit, I'll come to you first. You talk to a lot of retailers all the time throughout the year. Obviously, this is a big topic of conversation. What's your initial reaction to the findings of this year's report, and do they tally with what you're hearing in your conversations with the retailers across the country?
So, Chris, I do speak to a lot of customers, and a lot of customers do tell us the same thing, which is retail crime is the trajectory is northbound. It's going up and it's going, it's becoming worse. I think one of the key metrics that you've not mentioned is 1.2 million instances of verbal abuse, and that's also on the up. The challenge around what customers can do, they feel a little bit limited. There's advances in CCTV, there's advances in providing guidance internally to teams. The likes of what we're doing is trying to speak to our customers, give them the best guide on how to deal with incidences. But I think the general consensus is a lot of customers feel a little bit strapped in the sense of I'm not getting the support that I should be getting. And I am essentially now becoming even more vulnerable because I feel when I need support, nobody's hearing me, essentially. So instances that are going up in crime that are impacting the retailers, it's leaving profound impacts on their mental ability, their impact on their them as individuals, as families, when it comes to investment of finances, where they're having to recuperate loss and rebuild their lives, essentially. And then that's a follow-on to the impact of their colleagues and staff members, a lot of which I was speaking to somebody quite recently who actually said, I'm losing staff who don't want to work in this sector. They don't want to work in this sector because they don't feel like they've got the support. And when we say support, I'm referring to the criminal justice system when people are trying to being held, when we're trying to get them when we're holding people account through the justice system, and then the impact of not having support through not having enough police officers or not having enough resources to attend instances and crime. So I think if I'm honest, a lot of our customers feel vulnerable, and they're asking for more of a push, more of a dynamic adjustment to try to get that support.
Yeah, absolutely right. James, we've been through this report for a number of years now, and I mean, maybe I'm wrong to say shocking but not surprising. Is it wrong for us to not be surprised by these figures anymore?
Well, you can't be surprised, can you? Because what Taranjit's talked about there, talking to a lot of retailers, that's what we hear as well. You know, these are describing a problem rather than necessarily revealing a new one. But I think that what Taranjit says there really gets to the heart of it, that you've got a financial impact. I mean, now we talked about a 10p crime tax in this report. So if if all the costs of crime are divided by all the transactions in the sector, that equals 10 pence per transaction that the customer is ultimately paying for that. The other way of looking at the financial implication is how much do you have to sell to make up the cost of crime to your business? Because of course you only, you know, you're having to sell many times that because obviously, you know, of whatever gross profit you're making to cover those losses. But also what Taranjit says about the personal impact, you know, on people's mental health, on people's willingness to work in the sector, on recruiting people, losing good people who otherwise work in the sector. So that is why it's so important that we focus on what works and how we can try to make a dent on what is a massive problem, which I'm sure we'll get into in a sec.
Yeah. Ed, you talk to government officials all the time about crime figures, and the figures that they put out, which we've put into the put into the report for the first time this year, are less than a tenth of what we've highlighted when it comes to particularly on shop theft. What direction are the official figures going in? And is there a sense that, is there an understanding that this is reaching a crisis point?
Well, as you say, Chris, there's definitely a misalignment between the official figures and the figures from industry, whether it's the our figures or our other trade groups that are recording information. I think the government are mindful of that, and they're trying to invest more in policing to help them be able to increase their sort of reporting processes so that we can improve that overall. I think the question is really how much government can do this centrally through policy, or how much this is about police forces and policing crime commissioners making a change in how they allocate resource and time into tackling those issues. And that's really where we've got to continue to focus and push on.
Yeah. And so it's a really good point to move on to Ben, because Ben, you've had this lived experience of police talking to you about resources and about allocating resources. You've had a lot of challenges over the last couple of years when it comes to crime in your store, but hopefully some positives coming out of that. Can you just take us through your journey and you know, going from having a store that's dealing with a lot of crime to then all the things that have got you to where you are now?
Yeah, I mean, when we initially came into Croydon, we were on the back of that it was going to be redeveloped. And initially, we didn't have much theft, even though we were based in the town centre. We had a few incidents a week, and it was just quite manageable, considering the industry we're in. But recently, the last two to three years, I would say, it's shot up massively. And, you know, we were at some at one point, we were dealing to 10, 12 incidents a day, and we were, you know, losing good staff, because it's not about just losing stock. You know, you lose staff morale, customer confidence, and the sense of safety in your own business. It was just very demoralizing, you know, coming into work every day, not knowing if your staff may be threatened, abused, robbed. It's exhausting, and it made retail a very unsafe profession. Fortunately, I think with, you know, there was an incident where ACS asked us to speak about our experiences with the press, and that kind of led to a number of media requests, and that kind of shone a spotlight on our high street, on my particular road. We had the MP and local, like the BID, and a few other organizations come in and visit us, and it was a lot of attention on us, and it actually did improve our situation. But it was like, does the media need to shine a spotlight? Do we need to go on national TV for us to get that kind of attention and support? Because, you know, I'm hearing from retailers, since we talk so much about this, all my WhatsApp groups and retailers I meet in the cash and carry, they go through the same thing, if not worse than we were. And I think that's why I realize that it's happening up and down the country, and not necessarily everyone has a platform to kind of speak about the issues they're going through. So, you know, it does need to be seriously tackled and dealt with head on.
Yeah. And it's difficult, isn't it? Because I think you've shared before that, you know, you've had police come into the store and say, look, we don't have extra police because you've been on TV talking about this. We've just taken the police from one place and then put them in another. And it right. shouldn't be on you to have to raise your head above the parapet. James, and there has been a real challenge over the last years is getting people to talk about crime. I mean, less so in our sector, and there's more of it happening, but across retail more widely, there's almost been a hesitance to say that yes, crime is happening because you want to make your stores feel like a safe and welcoming place. But it was like we're kind of running out of choices now.
Yeah, I mean, safe and welcoming place for consumers, but also for colleagues, as Taranjit was saying about, you know, people, you don't want to be telling your colleagues it's a dangerous place to work, and potential colleagues, that message. So, but I think we have got to the point now where it feels almost that you can't deny that it's a massive problem, and we're hearing about it from so many sources, and we have to talk about this openly. And hope as a result of that, we prompt a better response from government. Yes, I mean, the bill having second reading today does have some help, very, very, very helpful things in it. The specific offence about assaulting a shop worker, the removal of the £200 limit, which has always been sort of quite fitfully applied and interpreted in different ways. I don't suggest, I mean, there have been crimes under £2,000 to £200 value investigated in the last few years, but that will be helpful as well. Greater use of criminal behaviour orders, things like that. But then it does come down to how that's going to be implemented on the ground and how we can break this cycle. But yeah, I think the idea of sort of pretending this isn't as big a problem as it is and hoping it'll go away is just not a credible strategy.
Yeah. And some of the things that you mentioned about some of the attitudes towards theft is that it's a small crime. It's a minor crime. And the retail crime isn't real crime, which is, you know, it's obviously ridiculous because of the impact we've already heard about that. I think it's really important that we talk about one of the things that comes up in the media quite a lot. And so a lot of the questions I get are around organized crime and repeat offenders. And Taranjit, when you talk to retailers, you say obviously the trajectory of crime is on the up. How much are people attributing to people that are stealing to sell on, people that are part of organized groups, part of wider criminality in communities? Because we hear a lot that this is, you know, we've heard lots of talk about, oh, this is part of the cost of living crisis, this is people that are stealing from themselves. But I don't get the sense that that's the reality. Do you have any feedback from retailers about the organized nature of the crimes that they're facing?
I think if we look at it from a retailer's perspective, any crime is not good crime. It's bad crime, right? So they don't want crime. The challenge we've actually got is we need kind of like urgent interventions where we're in a place where if we don't support our high street, our independent retailers could be wiped out with a view of not having the support, not being seen as being safe. There's loads of things that are going to wipe out that particular business, that landscape that we're going to end up changing because we as a community, as an industry, we can't face into the challenges that impact our day-to-day living. So when we look at organized crime or we look at spontaneous crime, crime is crime, but we don't have the resource in place to challenge safely the end consumer that's causing this impact that's impacting people's lives as well as people's businesses financially. What we're asking for is we need meaningful actions that can prevent the crime in the first instance, challenge the individual that's causing the crime so that they could be held accountable, and then that in itself will provide a continued element of safety towards our shop workers in a way that we've got sustained control of the retail landscape. When I speak to our customers, there's a lot of real good retailers that want to stand up, but they're vulnerable, and that vulnerability is seen because of the way they interact with customers and the way they transact with customers. And we shouldn't be facing those type of challenges in this day and age. Our criminal system needs to step up a little bit so that we can support our frontline staff
Yeah,
and colleagues.
no, you're absolutely right. And you mentioned earlier about some of the actions that retailers were taking already to invest in crime prevention and detection. What have you seen in stores, and what are your retailers telling you that is working? I mean, you talked about a couple of things, but CCTV being one of the things. Where's the money going is what I'm saying, because the report says, you know, a quarter of £1 billion spent over the last year alone on crime prevention measures. What are you seeing in stores that's changed over the last few years?
So I think every good retailer out there is in effect taking out dynamic risk assessments, and they're looking at their business holistically with the view of where are their vulnerabilities. So they are looking at CCTV, they're looking at smoke cloak solutions, they're looking at bar solutions for gantries. I've even seen a customer of ours in the past where they've put railings and bars on additional windows at the back of buildings to secure. I've seen mag locks. The list is endless. Everybody's looking at views of how they can protect their business in a way which reduces the element of risk for them. I don't think there is a one fit solution that meets everybody's needs, and I think it's important for everybody to look at their own business and find means and ways that works for them. But there are a lot of solutions out there. But having all of these solutions and tapping into these solutions is great. But the underlying cause is how do we su support them as an industry, as a community, essentially, and hold people to account will still need to come from our criminal justice system.
Yeah, absolutely. Ben, I'm re really interested to know what's changed in your business over the last few years, and just in terms of crime detection, crime prevention, what feels to you an acceptable level of crime? Because you talked about a few years ago you had, two or three incidents a week, and that felt manageable, but then, a huge spike in that. Where are you at now, and what's changed in your store to help that process?
We're managing to try and bring it down. We've had to take matters in our own hands, to be honest with you. So things like, I know it's against data protection, but we take screenshots of people who are known offenders who have been caught stealing from our store, and you can't get them to stay away by banning them. Even we've had the police try and ban them, they still come back in with a hat, different hat on. Or glasses on. So we've taken stills from the face and we literally stuck it on the front door. And that's actually been more effective than so many other things that we've done. We're much more focused on security. So, we have a butcher at the back, but his job now is, when he's not serving customers, is to literally be by the till, help out the cashiers. We're carrying a lot more staff members than actually the business warrants, purely because, we've had so many staff handing notices and leave. One thing we've had to do, which we didn't want to do, was reduce opening hours. And that's something that, we're not going to be able to kind of go back to. So we were used to close at 11:30, and it's now 9:30, which really isn't appropriate, really, for a London convenience store. When you've got Tesco's Express is opening until 11, it feels so early to close at 9:30, but no one wants to work that period. So that requires more of a change, like in how the police operate up and down our high street. So we've had to do like a number of measures and implement them just to kind of make our team feel more safe. And we've actually put everyone on a conflict and management course. Where it's a local kung fu school, and they come in and they teach us how to kind of defuse situations and kind of, improve our responses to things. So it's kind of just an ongoing focus on security and training, which I never thought we would have to do as retailers. You know, our strength is on our range of products and pricing and sourcing, but we're becoming more like a security firm, because we can't necessarily, which retailer can afford to put security at 15, £20 an hour throughout the day. So we kind of have to do it ourselves.
Yeah, it's really tough, isn't it? Because you've got decisions that you're being, making that are positive decisions, like you said about the course and conflict resolution and those kind of things, but then changing opening hours is a big, tough commercial decision. But if it works, then you've got that ultimate responsibility to the people that you employ to keep them safe. So, it's a very, very difficult decisions. Ed, when I go through the report this year, there is a definite shift in moving. We are describing the problem, and it's important to continue describing the problem. But there is a shift into what we talked about here, things that work. Why is this year? Why is this the right time to do this? And has anything stood out to you as something that retailers can do, can pick up from this discussion to improve the situation they're facing?
Yeah, we've really tried to put a focus on what works. We've demonstrated, I think, that this is a really difficult and negative issue to talk about, and it's right that we continue to highlight the extent to which this is a problem for retailers and the people working in store. But we also wanted to focus on and be part of a communal strategy that helps people invest and prevent crime from happening in their businesses. So there is a thread that runs through the report that says, okay, there's not just a problem with shop theft, but here's some of the solutions and areas that you can look at to tackle it in your store and try and help share some ideas in that space. Because from a very practical perspective, it is great that we've got the changes in the bill that's coming up. It's great that we've got a government that's much more focused around public safety and justice, but those changes are going to take time, and retailers need to have a sense of agency that they can do something now and have some good ideas. So the report is kind of the foundation of helping have those conversations and thoughts about that. And I think there's lots of things that stand out that are really interesting. I think one is around enabling colleagues. A big shift from last year to this year is there's a lot more focus on the investment of being around training colleagues to use the equipment that's put in store. So there's always a story about equipment going to store. So body-worn cameras, headsets, great ways to make colleagues feel connected. That is brilliant, but it's also about making sure that they're using it really well so it can diffuse situations, or using it really well to be able to connect them with the police and report things to the police. And a few of the case studies included in the crime report really stood out for me. So Natalie Lightfoot and Chloe Taylor Green have put in different systems to help their colleagues to be able to report crime that is happening in the store directly to the police, whether that's through sharing CCTV or having a centralized system to sort of track offenses that are happening in the store, because those things really work over time and they really address a key frustration that I think Ben and Taranjit have addressed, which is when someone comes in the store repeatedly victimizes against people working there, you're frustrated you're not getting the response you want. It seems that the best way to get that frustration addressed is to be able to connect with the police and empower your colleagues to do that. And the report really brings that out this year with some really good examples. So the What Works section in the actual report is there and is based on some research with some structured interviews and new questions. But also on the website, there's a whole selection of new guidance that brings that all together around what works, how you prevent violence and abuse, how you diffuse situations. So it's a real, real big focus. And I pull out that training and enabling colleagues to use that equipment and connect with the police well.
Yeah. And it's almost a challenge to government, right? To say we're not just telling you that there is a problem. We are demonstrating that we are doing everything we can as a sector to, one, engage with the justice system, but also to take it upon ourselves to try and reduce crime in that way. And James, this report you mentioned earlier, this comes on the eve of the second reading of the Crime and Policing Bill, potentially a landmark bill for this Labour government in its first year. We see a lot of bills go through Parliament every year. Lots of them talk about crime. You mentioned a couple of things earlier. What's different about this bill? Why should retailers be paying attention to this one? And what opportunities are there for a meaningful change in priorities this year, as we see hopefully the bill come to pass?
Yeah, I think the government has kind of been circling in the right direction for a few years now, the last government and this government, in terms of things like policies around all crime being investigated, all reasonable lines of inquiry being followed, better use of out-of-court penalties, now the separate offence for assaulting a shop worker. So all of these things, and obviously removing this idea of decriminalising crime under a certain level. So I think all of that is kind of good. I think you need to see it as some more tools, some more signals. That in itself does not prevent the crime or does not deal with crime. So the emphasis now shifts with the passing of the bill when that happens. But even now, this shifts to police forces, police and crime commissioners to get the right priorities in place. And by pure coincidence, last week I was presenting an award at the Hampshire Police and Crime Commissioners annual awards, Business Crime Award. And that was presented to a guy called Chief Inspector Marcus Cater, a guy called a police officer called Chief Inspector Marcus Cater, who's really led some activity around identifying repeat offenders, having support in that community, someone identified there as to help those individuals break the cycle of reoffending, treatment and rehabilitation for the drug problems and addiction problems that often drive that. And talking to a retailer who's based in the area and has worked with the chief inspector, that has made a direct impact on the crime that they're seeing in their stores. But it's through initiatives like that that they're not going to be run by the Home Office. They're going to be run by local police forces in partnership with retailers, in partnership with other charities and local groups. That is what can actually start to make a dent on the problem. And I think that this is now really the shifting the emphasis across to those local police forces. Some good news. A few years ago, we started looking at police and crime commissioner plans. I think about 6 out of 42 mentioned retail crime.
Yeah.
Now, including the Hampshire Police and Crime Commission's report, because I read it last week, their plan, 36 of them have that. So six don't rather than six do. So that's a really significant change in terms of the focus. But what retailers, I think, are saying is, well, that's great, I understand that, but we just need to see it working now. We need to see the sort of measures that Chief Inspector Cater and others are using, and there are other examples around the country, to break that cycle of reoffending and make a dent on the problem.
Yeah, I mean, and we don't want to have a kind of local lottery where you've got some police and crime commissioners that are doing a fantastic job and that have all of these measures in place, and some that just don't. This has to be not an exceptional thing. This has to be the norm across the
Absolute
country.
minimum has to be effective reporting. You talked about how some of the people we featured in our report, Natalie, Chloe, and others, have got now really no one-touch reporting of crimes that happen. That's an absolute bare minimum. That should be the case. There shouldn't be any force where you're having to go down and give CCTV or wait for someone to come in and pick it up. And I think sometimes there's this conflation between attendance and investigation. Now, sadly, we are a long, long way past the time where a shop theft incident without any violence or threat attached to it would result in the police attending, unless they happen to be there. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about investigating that crime by receiving the report, by joining the dots to other offences that offenders are committed, and therefore when they come to court, when they come to be dealt with, you're either looking at effective ways of breaking the cycle of reoffending, or you're looking at a custodial sentence, which is still part of the toolbox that the courts have, but that should be a really meaningful custodial sentence because they're not being punished for one crime, they're being punished for 100. I mean, and literally, it could easily be 100 they're committing. So, it's an emphasis now on the courts, on the police, and on those reporting systems and retailers using those.
Yeah, absolutely right. Taranja, we're coming towards the end of this discussion, and I mentioned at the start you talked about the rising tide of crime, and that is certainly the case. Do you think, given everything we've heard today and given the actions that are coming, that there is good news on the horizon, that there is perhaps a point where we've reached a peak in theft, in violence, and that we can start to get a hold of this with some better relationships between retailers, the police, and the rest of the justice system? Is there optimism ahead?
I think the opportunity to reduce crime is always there. If we all work together in synergy, there is an opportunity to reduce crime. I think the way where I am is, if the new bill suggests and implements what it's suggesting is proactively executed, what I would like to see is a one approach that fits and meets everybody's needs. So it should not be, it should be enforced equally. So what I'm trying to get at is, it's great to get to the large supermarkets, the large corporates, etc., but our independent sector is also vulnerable and takes a large proportion of the country with the support they provide to local communities and other local businesses and the wider community. But I would want to see the bill being used correctly and supporting all businesses, most importantly, independent retailers. So I don't want independent retailers to fall behind with the move forward. I think what we continue to champion is what the role of our independent retailers play in the communities that they support and the economy that they support. So that's really important. But what I would really want to add on is, our call to action will be on probably three areas. So thinking out loud now, I'll be looking at the enforcement against repeat offenders. So enhance enforcement against repeat offenders, the improved police response times. So getting support where we need them at a pace that we can support our retailers, and essentially stronger sentencing. That goes back to what James just mentioned, which is breaking that cycle of habit. If we can interject that cycle of habit and break it, we're in a place where we've got some successful plans to progress and reduce that element of crime that's impacting our industry.
Yeah. And Ed, some final words from you. Breaking the cycle of reoffending, right, is the core of a lot of this, what Taranja talked about. Given what you've seen from the bill and the conversations you had, do you think that is an achievable goal for this government?
I think it is because they're going to be forced. They are forced to look at interventions that more directly deal with these offenders outside of courts. They look at orders, the bill introduces criminal behaviour orders that look at banning people from locations. They look at putting them into rehabilitation and support. And I think once you can direct those in and push that out there, it's a much quicker response than trying to do through custodial sentence and prison systems. So yes, it is achievable. It still comes back to the point I think we've all made, which is around, can we get good information into the police and then be able to process that well to get that addressed in courts? So it all comes back to reporting to be able to achieve that. But yes, I think it is achievable for this government. And you know, from the conversations we've had with MPs, from ministers, from officials, this is a priority area.
Yeah.
You know, they have a safer streets mission. And part of the big part of that is around high streets, is around local parades, it is around retail crime. And, you know, I think hopefully the crime report is a demonstration that we will keep pushing this and we'll keep them focused on that.
So for everyone listening to the podcast, I encourage you to take a look through the crime report, not just for the state of retail crime as it stands right now, but also for some, as we discussed, some really useful fact sheet on what works in stores to make a difference. It's all available on our website to download right now, and I will put the link to the crime report and the guidance in the show notes as well. So please check that out. We'll be talking about the crime report in detail and much more at our Safe and Responsible Retailing Conference on Wednesday in Birmingham. That is shaping up to be a really busy, really insightful day. Lots of change coming this year, particularly in areas like recycling, vape regulations, proof of age. It's a big year for change in the convenience sector. So we'll see lots of you there. And huge thanks to Ben, Taranjit, James and Ed for being part of this episode. Thanks very much.